This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Fans of The Walking Dead know him as Dr. Harlan Carson, caring community doctor of Hilltop Colony. Long before that, Keith was building his Hollywood credits right here in North Carolina. Though he did set out for L.A. early in his career, he has since learned that when it comes to staying busy as an actor, there is no place like home. Keith pursued a Master of Fine Art at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro and scored roles on Matlock and the BBC series Lovejoy without ever leaving North Carolina. He's been in over 70 movies and TV shows, including Under the Dome, Sleepy Hollow, and A Walk in the Woods. And you can add to that resume now writer and producer and star of his own movie, Shifting Gears. R. Keith Harris joins us in the studio now. Welcome to the State of Things.
Thank you so much. That Walking Dead music, that leader is like the best, some of the best music. You hear that come on, and it's just...
Do you get a funny feeling when you hear that?
Oh, man, it's
music?
So
what
creepy.
Happens?
It's so creepy. Yeah. I love it.
You got that. You were here in North Carolina. You'd done acting. You'd been out to L.A., and then got that role here. Yeah. How does that work?
I just audition. My agent is out of Atlanta, Houghton Talent in Atlanta, and I had auditioned for the show probably an average about once a season. Not that often. And I actually avoided watching the show for a long time. I didn't. I was like, man, everybody's watching it.
Yeah.
I don't want to go along with the crowd. I don't want to do that. Then I auditioned for it and I was like, well, okay, I'll give it a shot. And I watched that first season and, oh, the first season just grabbed you by the collar and just come here.
But it was already a hit, right?
Oh, yeah,
so
absolutely.
What's it like jumping in to what is a classic already? I mean, a popular series like that.
It is super exciting and super scary all at the same time.
Yeah.
Because, these guys, by the time I got there, I came in at the end of season six. And, obviously they've been doing it for 6 years already. Right. And, they were tight. But I came away from the set the very first day, even coming away from my costume fitting, going, it felt like a family environment. These guys were very welcoming, very tight-knit, efficient. I mean, you wouldn't imagine the efficiency at that place.
Yeah.
Just amazing time.
So talk a little bit about your character.
Dr. Harlan Carson. It was interesting. For security reasons, for The Walking Dead, I'm a script analysis guy. I love taking the script. I love kind of pulling it apart, kind of seeing, where everything fits. But for The Walking Dead, I got my pages, period.
Huh.
I didn't get anybody else's pages. I didn't get the whole script. I got my pages alone. So if I was on three pages in an episode, that's all I got.
How is that common? Actually, you should walk us back. You should give us all the pages. For those of us who have not seen it or may not have seen it, give us a little synopsis of what the series is about.
All right. So the series revolves around this character, Rick, who he's a cop. And they sidestep the apocalypse slightly because he, in the line of duty, gets injured in the line of duty and ends up in the hospital in a coma. And then he wakes up and everything's happened. And so you're finding out what he's finding out as he's finding it out.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's sort of the genesis of the series. And then it's about this small group of survivors surviving. And that's the thing that got me. It's not about the zombies.
Right.
It's about the people and how they work together to overcome
and the zombies
this.
Are just one of the many threats that
exactly.
they face in this post-apocalyptic world.
Right. So, and because of the global phenomenon that it's become, there's everybody and their brother trying to find ways to, spoil it and get everything else. So you had to sign, when you audition, you had to sign a non-disclosure agreement, just audition. And then they would send you dummy scenes to use. So you weren't ever actually using anything directly from the script. So when I auditioned for it, I knew I was auditioning for a doctor, but, that was it.
And so that's the reason that you only get your pages.
Right.
That's part of that. But isn't that, how do you engage that way? Do you have to, how do you know what?
Well, in the process, it was interesting. First, to kind of get a feel for that character, I had to, because there wasn't a whole lot I could do in way of the actual script I was getting, is I went in and researched the character in the graphic novel. Hmm. So
And that was the genesis of this.
And about exactly. That, right? The graphic novel is what kind of spawned the series. And so I was able to go in and kind of, they have literally, it's Wikipedia breakdowns of every character, you know, their whole arc, everything. I mean, the fan base for the show is phenomenal. And so I was able to go on that show, go on the Wikipedia and, you know, kind of find that character and kind of, but there still wasn't anything about him before the apocalypse.
Right.
So, you know, I kind of in my head made him as kind of a doctor without borders kind of guy who would, you know, had spent some time, you know, in a third world situations, disaster relations and situations where, you know, he would go in and help. So, you know, kind of helped him, you know, to some extent in this transition, because in my mind, you know.
Well, that's kind of liberating in a way that you get to create the character. You get to create your own backstory, and hopefully it's going to jibe with what's going on.
Right, exactly.
Well, let's hear a little clip from this episode of The Walking Dead and Keith Harris, who plays the role of Dr. Harlan Carson. Let's listen.
Name's Harlan, by the way.
Maggie. That's my husband, Glenn.
We're bringing back medications. You may have saved more people than just us back there, Glenn.
You're a doctor?
Yeah, that's right.
You have any prenatal vitamins in there?
For you? Well, I was an obstetrician before, and I most definitely owe you. So, I'd say you two just hit the jackpot.
Keith Harrison, the role of Dr. Harlan Carson in The Walking Dead. Talking to him today, and now it might be a spoiler alert in case if you haven't been keeping up with the series, but the fact is...
Yeah.
You're dead.
I bit it, yeah. I bit it.
And that's not unusual for that series.
I didn't get bitten.
No.
I bit it.
I mean, the idea that you can get killed off in a series of that feature zombies, but it's not unusual. A lot of people are dying in that one, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the way
I mean,
goes.
If Carl's not safe, nobody's safe.
Well, let's talk about your background and how you came to pursue an acting career anyway. You born in Nashville, right, but then raised in Reidsville.
Yeah, I always joke I was in Nashville all of about an hour, I think. We were in Reidsville before I was a year old. So, yeah. You know, that was just my parents were there when he had a job there. And then he got a job as a principal in Rockingham County. And so, you know, I grew up there. I grew up doing... You know, I was very active. I was always outside. I was, you know, had a big imagination, always playing with my Star Wars toys and, you know, all that stuff. And I knew I wanted to be an actor when I was 9 years old. And it never really changed. I remember I was sitting in, we had one of those mid-1960s TVs, black and white, that was furniture, you know.
Had rabbit ears?
Oh, yeah. You know, you'd turn it off and it would go down that little dot, you know, in the center of the screen. Uh-huh. And I was watching this movie. It was, I think it was, you know, it was one of those Sundays. I don't remember the movie or who the actress was, but there was a close-up on her and she had this mix of, just distress and like betrayal and love and longing and like just this big mix of emotions coming out. And I just remember looking at that and going, I want to do that.
And you were about nine. Because you think about that, and that's not what all of us see at nine, particularly if it's a romantic moment or something like that. I mean, we just see, you know, come on, get on, so shoot somebody already.
Right.
But you actually see the wash of emotions and maybe thought to yourself, gosh, how does a person do that?
Yeah. And that's when I decided. And, you know, at that time, you know, in small town USA, Reidsville, Rockingham County, I didn't, you know, there, you know, was, you know, predated internet.
I thought they always had that in Reidsville.
You know, so, you know, I just did what I could do. I did church plays. I did, you know, high school drama. I did, you know, whatever I could do. And my high school teacher was the one that kind of had the wherewithal to get me involved in what's called the North Carolina Theater Conference. And that's a collegiate level theater award that happens each year. And as part of it, there is a high school scholarship audition for different colleges. And so I went and auditioned, and I got a partial scholarship to Catawba College in Salisbury and was there for 2 years before I transferred up to Western Carolina.
And then what'd you take at Western Carolina?
I got out with a Bachelor of Science in Radio, Television, Production, and Theater. I was 6 hours shy of a double major. And the two classes that I needed were not offered until the second semester of the next year. And I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Well, we'll find out what you did right after that and how it is you came back to North Carolina scoring lots of roles in the Triad and elsewhere, including The Walking Dead. Actor Keith Harris is with me. We're going to talk more about his career and life in North Carolina on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Do stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. R. Keith Harris, probably best known for his role in The Walking Dead as Dr. Harlan Carson. He's done over 70 movies and TV shows. His latest film, Shifting Gears, is a project that he wrote, produced, and starred in. Keith's story is different than many because he got a lot of those roles right here in North Carolina after a stint in Hollywood. When did you move to L.A.?
I moved out to L.A. in early 98. I graduated grad school in 97 from UNCG and was here for about, it was January, I believe, January of 98, super early. And there was a friend of mine, I talked my MFA into letting me do my thesis in a film as opposed to a stage production. And I worked with the first graduating class from the School of the Arts Film School to do my film. It was a film called About Faces with a director named Michael Patwin. And he had moved out and knew me, and I called him up. And he called me up and said, hey, I got a room for you. And it was actually $8 more a month than I was paying in Greensboro. And it was on the beach.
Well,
and I was like, let me think about that.
What you're not saying is that it was a 1962 Volkswagen Beetle on the beach in Santa Monica, but what the heck?
That's right.
We'll talk about it. Let's not go too far past UNCG, grad school there. Mm-hmm. Great program in the
Fantastic
theater arts,
program.
Right?
Yeah, it was actually voted one of the top 10 most underrated theater programs in the nation. Hands down, I'm a better actor for having gone through that program.
What do you learn in college about acting? Or an MFA program?
Yeah, I mean, they run the gamut in that respect because they everything from theater history to period styles to it's more of a classical education as far as theater goes. And to some extent, I read a great article not too long ago about the actors training in the U.S. and why so many U.K. actors are taking a lot of really great, strong American roles because of the way they're trained,
Interesting. That does make a difference. It's not just watching a lot of movies right. and then going to Hollywood.
Andrew Lincoln, he's... You know, he's from the UK, and he plays a strong American on The Walking Dead,
There you go. So now you get to L.A., and not only that, we should talk about teaming up with somebody from the School of the Arts, which has got a great film, but a lot of great people in the film business have gone through that school as
absolutely.
Well.
Right? Absolutely.
So now you're out in Hollywood. What was that like for you?
It was a mix of stuff. It was amazing. It was scary. I mean, it's a big city. It's about as big as you get. I remember the first time driving up into the city, just coming out white knuckling my steering wheel, just trying to figure out, how to get around. And again, that was before, GPS is on your phone. So, we were driving around.
It doesn't matter in LA. You're just in one spot. So who needs GPS? I get it. I'm at this intersection. I'm going to be here for the rest of my life.
Pretty much.
We sort of all imagine, and I guess we've heard the stories, pretty competitive, obviously. You're doing auditions a lot, day and night?
Well, that's part of the problem out there. If you don't have good representation, and everybody's trying to get good representation, everybody and their brother, and that's the thing that really hit me out there. You know, if you study law, you go be a lawyer. If you study, medicine, you go be a doctor. If you study the arts, you go be a waiter. You know, there's a disconnect. Yeah. And out there, I went out going, I'm not going to do it. And I'm not going to go out. And hi, I'm an actor. Can I take your order? Mm-hmm. I'm like fries with that. I ended up working a temp job for about a year after I got out there. But the problem is it's show business, and business is the bigger word. Mm. And the business happens during the day when I was working. So I ended up biting the bullet and, taking a waiting job, and it ultimately paid off. I ended up booking an episode of 90210 out there, and some other stuff, some other independent stuff that was real good.
What's the order of operations? Okay, so somehow representation's hard to get. They're looking for promising actors, and so it's this dynamic.
Yeah.
Now you book that, you get a part in 90210. Mm-hmm. Now do you get better representation? Does stuff beget stuff, or can you hit a cul-de-sac after
that? In theory, it does. Yeah. I went out having been on. I was on Matlock. I was on From the Earth to the Moon on HBO. I had been on. I had probably 6 solid credits. That I had gotten here before I went out. And, I thought I was going out with a bazooka, and it ended up a little more like, like a little pop gun. Like, oh yeah, what have you done? Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. Your first job, acting job, was with Andy Griffith and Matlock. Was that it?
Technically the very first one. This is kind of the funny thing. I got the Lovejoy Mysteries first.
BBC.
It was BBC, yeah. And they were doing a special episode on about the lost colony down in Wilmington. And I booked this scene with Ian McClellan, I guess. I was super stoked. But I was down there. They put me up, and they started running over budget and over time, and they cut my scene. But they cut it after lunch, so I had the hotel room for the rest of that day. So I called my agent and I said, hey, I'm down here. Is there anything else I can audition for while I'm down here? And they said, oh yeah, go to this audition for Matlock. And I went over to that and booked that and was back down there the next week. And I was like, this is easy.
Good it'll be in LA. Yeah.
And then I didn't get cast in anything for 3 years. So I'm like, come on.
See, it's the North Carolina connection. It's Andy Griffith. It's the lost colony. Yeah. You can't leave home, but you do. So, any big takeaways? You did come home. We'll talk more about what happens then. But giant lessons learned from living in LA.
Yeah, I said it briefly. What hit me out there is it's show business, and business is the bigger word, and that's actually when I started writing. I moved out there and realized that, for lack of a better example, actors have to fit into someone else's vision. And if they don't, sorry, better luck next time. So I realized I had stories that I wanted to tell. And I realized that, hey, as part of the business, you can't make a movie without a script. So I was just trying to fill in the gaps. Yeah. And then once I wrote a few scripts, I was looking at them and going, well, there's nobody banging down my door to make these things. So I guess I got to figure that out too.
But you also, it seems to me it's a good way to network too and stay in the business. And because as you say, there's other ways to make a living and still stay connected with the people who can hire you in show business. And again, if Applebee's is not your future, then perhaps writing a script would be a good use of time.
If it wasn't something I could actually produce and be in, then, maybe I could sell it. Yeah. That was sort of the rationale behind starting to write.
You did come back. What was that like coming back for you to North Carolina?
It was a mix of emotions. LA's tough, and I never really had good representation out there. I I had one manager that was pretty decent, and then she decided she was going to go be a chef and go to culinary school, and she dropped me, and then I had one other agent that ended up getting me the 90210 thing. But out there, it's a numbers game. If you're not going out at least 3-4 times a week, then you're just not in the running.
Well, how do you find, do you just pick the agent, the manager who's got all the top stars and say, this should work? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, you can do that. But then, of course, they would look at your resume and go,
yeah.
Bleh. And I walked into one meeting out there, and I thought this place might be a good fit. And, he looked at my picture, and he was like, I have 5 of you. I'm like, I'm sorry. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah.
My mother said that when I was born.
Yeah, I have 5 of you. I don't need you. I mean, that was one of those L.A. short Hollywood, meetings. I have 5 of you. I don't need you. Bye bye. Okay, nice to meet you.
So then you got to find somebody who has none of you, and that's hard to do, right?
Right, exactly.
Right, and there may be a reason they have none of you. They don't want, the you that they're...
You have to come at it looking... You have to come at it looking like I'm a product. You have to, like... that's one of the important things with headshots. You're basically taking a product shot, of a coffee mug or a couch or a chair that you're going to sell on Amazon. It's a, and if it's got to capture the essence of that product, somebody's got to go, and that's when you start getting bad reviews on Amazon, is when you order something and it comes and it ain't like the picture.
That's right. Well, and the other part of that, it seems to me, is the reason there's 5 of them is because this is the thing that's selling now. So you can do counter programming, as we used to call it in radio. Yeah. You can be the other thing, but the thing about the other thing is nobody wants that. That's why there aren't 5 of them.
Right.
So that's a tricky balance.
They say, be a character actor. There was another friend of mine who was at UNCG. She moved out to L.A., and she called herself Short Round Girl. She was about 5 foot nothing and just a little beach ball. And she went out to L.A., and she booked, within 3 months, booked a money store commercial. It was a bank. I guess it was First Union money store commercial. She made, 30 or 40 grand on that. It's a national spot. Then she booked the Tiger Woods Buick commercial. And then she booked she worked consistently because she was a very specific type.
Yeah.
There's more room.
Right.
For those kind of.
But you got to be just right then. You got to be just the right character. Well, I talk about coming home because you didn't come home empty handed. You came home with the woman of your dreams. Am I right?
Well, actually, no.
So you did come home empty-handed.
I pretty much.
This is a terrible story. No, I'm always getting sadder by the minute.
I always say I went out to L.A. and went for broke and pretty much achieved it. But I came back. I had moved home because I had re-met someone while I came home for Christmas 1 year, and then moved back, and then that relationship went kaplooey after about a year. And then I met the woman of my dreams.
from North Carolina?
Actually, no. She is from Dallas.
Okay.
And it was funny because about the time I was moving to L.A., I had a friend, Connie, who was going to Scotland. And at that time, I was out in L.A. She went to Scotland for, study abroad and met my wife in Scotland. And they became travel buddies and kind of toured around, went all over the place. And then she moved back. They both moved back. And she was like, you should come to Greensboro. And my wife was like, why?
Yeah.
And then she came to visit and was like, oh, I get it. So, yeah.
So she liked Greensboro right away. So what were you doing then when you came back immediately after that?
Right when I came back, I actually took a job. I was just trying to get back on my feet, and I actually took a job doing some marketing and press work for a mortgage company. I was designing their ads and doing some work like that.
Now, did you feel at that moment like everything was over, like you were never going to act again? What was that moment like?
For me, it was always like wherever it ends up, I'll always do it, even if it's on the level of it's just community theater or – it's not anything that I feel like will ever be out of me.
Yeah.
You know, there's sacrifices you make. You know, the difference between here and there is, you know, out there, everything's pretty much in a 15-mile radius, you know, that you need to go to or right. get around to. It takes 2 hours to get everywhere.
Right, I was going to say, you could drive from Greensboro to L.A. in the time it took right. you to get the 15 miles.
But here, you know, it's easy an hour and a half somewhere. If it's not in the immediate area, it's, you know, here in Raleigh, it's in Charlotte, it's in Asheville, it's in Wilmington, it's to Atlanta, you know. Yeah. So you have to, and before, and that's been the biggest change I've seen in the craft and the business part of it is the advent of the online profile submissions. Because I can now tape, you know, do my audition at my studio and upload it to Actors Access and submit it, and at the very most have to drive for a callback if that happens. So that's been a wonderful invention right. for the actor, especially in the Southeast, because, you know, before if I had a call, you know, if I had an audition in Wilmington, you know, I could do it just under 3 hours. I had it down to the minute. I could get down, you know, spend 15 minutes, drive back. You know, yeah. that's a day out of work. Right. You know, gas money, food money, you know, the yeah. whole thing. So you really had to weigh, you know, those kind of opportunities.
Right. And you're able to raise a family. You've got two children, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ever Gabriella. And Elijah Harris.
And what's that meant to you to the idea? I mean, imagine having a family. And I mean, people obviously do it. There's, mm-hmm. there seem to be an awful lot of people in L.A. So mm-hmm. obviously they're having families. Would that make a difference to you? Can you imagine living in L.A., raising a family? Would it make a difference to you?
Mm-hmm. I knew when I was out there I didn't want to do that. However, I've never really counted out going back. But it would have to be the really, really right circumstance. I mean, just really right circumstance. And so far, I've not come across that.
Talk about the name, because we've said a couple times, our Keith Harris and Keith Harris. And there's kind of an interesting story behind that.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, when I moved out, I had become SAG eligible. SAG is the Screen Actors Guild. Mm-hmm. And I had become SAG eligible while I was here. And I knew that, you know, this was a right-to-work state. So I never joined while I was here. Mm-hmm. And of course, California is a union state. And so when I went out, I had saved up the money so I could just move out and go, boom, paid the money. Right. I'm SAG. And that opens the door right. to a lot more opportunities for agents and that kind of thing. So that's just like basic, right. you know, basic need number one out there. If you're going to try and pursue acting is to, you know, be SAG when you go out, because it's, you know, it's a nightmare otherwise.
But they got rules, and they got rules about names.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I went to sign up, and it was they already had a Keith Harris. So I'm Ronald Keith Harris Jr. My dad always went by Ron, and they always called me Keith for distinction. So I went with our Keith Harris.
That. It's the strangest thing, because the first time I encountered that, I had a good friend, a guy who became a good friend of mine who worked at NPR. I'd been following him. He worked at Iowa Public Radio. He left there. He went to NPR. He became a newscaster, Richard Harris. And, mm-hmm. and longtime listeners will remember Richard Harris being the NPR, all things considered, newscaster. Well, he joins the union there. It was after SAG. Mm-hmm. And they tell him, we already have a Richard Harris, and a pretty famous guy.
Right, right.
So he just changed his name to Harry Potter. No, that's I don't know how he didn't change his name, because he said, you know, we're in public radio. We're Mandalit Galbarco. We roll our R's. We do not change our names in public radio.
No way.
Somehow, I don't know how he got permission somehow, and he was able to keep his name. And I suppose you can do that. You know, Richard Harris thinking
there's probably
no confusion between the all things considered a newscaster and King Arthur.
Right. Yeah, there's probably some you know paperwork you could do, but it just I was like,
put the R in front of it. It was because he had to change his name. I'd like the Harry Potter if he couldn't put an R in front of it. So, listen, we're going to continue our conversation. I want to find out about your latest project, the movie you're doing. Also talk about film incentives.
Okay.
The legislature took them all away, and all the business has left. So we'll talk about that. Keith Harris, who played Dr. Harlan Carson on The Walking Dead and started his career in Greensboro, continues to work and has got his own project. We'll talk about that and more when the State of Things continues. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, talking with actor Keith Harris, who spent three seasons playing Dr. Harlan Carson on The Walking Dead. He's had many film roles and TV as well, and he just wrote and produced and starred in his first feature film, Shifting Gears. Tell us about that.
Shifting Gears, the quick pitch is it's We Bought a Zoo meets Days of Thunder on Dirt.
Okay. and if I hadn't seen either of those, then
that's right. It's it's a sports comedy about dirt track racing, about this family who takes over this garage in a small town bequeathed to him by his estranged father. And they get there and realize that there's a lien on the property they didn't know about, and they have to the property's set to be sold in 60 days at auction, and they have to throw a Hail Mary to get the money to save the farm.
Oh, that's great. You got dirt bike racing.
Track. Late model dirt car. It's car.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. Well, this is fun. And you're doing it. You're shooting it in North Carolina.
We've already shot it. It's out now. It's we've finished it, and it's done. We shot it a couple years ago, and then we went through the whole process and had Technicolor out of New York do it, and it released on March 23rd. So it's out on Amazon, iTunes, DirecTV, pay-per-view, Vudu, anything and everywhere.
What's it like to shoot here and work here in North Carolina?
It's awesome. We worked with a company called Alderman Company out of High Point, and they are actually the largest photography studio in North America. It's a 250,000 square foot space. Their clients are, you know, LG, Amazon, Home Depot. I mean, they have national clients. And they had segued into doing commercial work. So, but it was mainly voiceover and B-roll of product and that kind of stuff. I met with Jeff, the president, and I said, you know, hey, you can, you know, read the script. There's a little bit of backstory to that. We had actually been close to production at one point, and the financing fell through. And at that point, by the time I talked to Jeff, I had pretty much come to the decision that, you know, the movie's not ever getting made. You know, we had to battle over the intellectual property and you know, that kind of stuff. We had to finally got settled. And so when it came,
because other people own this thing now, you've signed a few things away.
Well,
so
no.
Well,
they had tried to lay claim to it. They had no claim to it. But so that got all settled. But it's still at that point, it was like, this is just not ever happening. And so I, you know, we went to lunch, and I said, you know, you can read it. And I sent it to him at 6 o'clock on a Wednesday, and he emails me back at 9 o'clock. Going, I love this. You know, how can we help? And, you know, that after going through a sting like that, you're like, are you sure you know what you're asking me? hold on. You know, so.
Right.
And so we ended up working there, and it was amazing. They supplied all our interior sets. They built them, and our production offices were there. And on top of that, the biggest thing they did is raise the entire financing package.
Wow.
So we partnered together for that.
Is it getting easier? Are things more democratized these days? You talked about how you can be anywhere and start sending in, you know, your own tapes so that you can audition. Mm-hmm. Financing, fundraising, is it getting easier to make a movie, harder? What's it like if you're an idea?
It's easier in the sense that the technology is getting to the point where it's cheaper entry into a a quality film, producing a quality film. In the days of physical film, you know, there was just a dollar barrier. You couldn't get around it.
Right.
But now there are a lot of, you know, the technologies and the cameras that are coming in that will shoot, you know, the standard 4K stuff. It's getting, you know, cheaper to get one of those. And if you can't buy it, you know, save up enough money and buy it, you know, you can rent them pretty easily. You know, there's a lot of them around.
Used to be
just
a robust film industry in North Carolina before the North Carolina legislature took away the incentives. Huh?
Yeah.
What do you think about that, and what kind of impact do you think that's had?
It's had a tremendous impact. When that happened, you know, you just heard a big sucking sound at the border, like everything going down to Atlanta. And that's unfortunate, because at one point, North Carolina, for, you know, 15 years, was third in production in the country.
Dino De Laurentiis opened up a whole shop.
And it's interesting, because North Carolina was actually on the cutting edge of the whole incentive phenomenon. They started out with like a 3 or 5% incentive early on, and then others kind of started catching a whiff of what it was doing, and you know, they kept getting bigger and bigger. And but, you know, Georgia did it right, in the sense that, like, if you just bring a production in turnkey in Georgia, it's 20%. If you use X number of crew, it's 25. If you use X number of cast,
from the
it's
area.
30. Yeah. So they built in an incentive to hire locals, and to hire, you know, and to pour back into the economy there. And that was one of the things that the North Carolina incentive was missing. It was very competitive. It was it was strong.
Yeah, but you can build that stuff in. Yeah. And there was still a multiplier effect, but you're saying it could have been much better had they built it in, but instead they just took it away.
Well, when there had always, from the inception of the last version of the incentive, there had always been a sunset clause in it. And it had been extended for, I don't know, 3 years, I think. And then McCrory took office and just let it sunset. Didn't try to save it and didn't try to do anything with it. And now,
but it's not just that they forgot. I mean, this was a policy decision, not to,
absolutely.
Right? I mean,
absolutely.
And we're still kind of curious about what was behind it, because it did, as I say, have a multiplier effect. So communities, particularly in Wilmington, but all over the state, in Western North Carolina as well, were feeling the extra dollars that poured into the state of North Carolina that are gone now.
Absolutely. And so now the new version of the incentive is a pot that actually just taken away the sunset language. And they have put in another like $33 million into the pot. It's not exactly the same as it was before, because before it was a qualified expenses credit. So if I turn in $1 million in qualified expenses to the state, and I'm paying my payroll through the state, and taxes are getting taken out, then I get $250,000 back.
Right.
Now, it's some sort of a pot that you can apply for, but the floor for production now is $5 million for features, and $1 million per episode of an episodic series. In the original incarnation, the floor was $250,000. So you had some, you know, you had some support for indigenous filmmaking, because you can, you know, you can.
Yeah,
North Carolina filmmakers can make a $250,000, you know, $500,000 movie. But, you know, now it's still really geared towards bringing outside production in.
Yeah.
And since everything happened the first time, you know, there's there's still a little wariness.
Well, sure, once you move out,
the
why
damage
would you
is
move
done.
Back? And these guys, and they never quite explained it. So it's like, well, who are these people?
Right.
And who knows how long they'll be? I mean, I just saw Jerry Brown in California, and you would think that California didn't have to do anything.
Right.
He's going to double their incentive package to bring back some of the industry that's been lost to these, particularly in the southeast of Atlanta.
Yeah, particularly Atlanta.
So the opportunity is there. So talk about shifting gears. You talk more about that, and where did that idea come from for you?
There was a buddy of mine. I moved back. I had written 3 scripts already, and had moved back. And there was a buddy of mine named Rick Kennedy, who he worked at a garage for like 10 years, and he just had a journal of kind of funny things that happened to him throughout the time. And him and some buddies used to run a dirt track car. Renegade class. And so he had this loose idea, and I just wanted, you know, he should have been born in the 50s. You know, I think in just last year and a half, he got a cell phone.
His hair straight.
Yeah. He does custom car interiors, and he's amazing. But, he had this idea, and I just wanted to see how serious he was, 'cause they were all these handwritten kind of scrawled notes. And I said, you know, okay, so type those up, and, you know, I'll take a look at them and see what I can do. And so I started looking over them and kind of looked at his idea, and fleshed out the story and kind of picked these tentpole moments that happen, you know, throughout the course of the film to the family that actually happened, you know, to him.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of the genesis of the idea.
You know, I wonder how much going back to the education that you had, and it's an education that you said at UNCG, the Master of Fine Arts, where you're looking at the history of this industry. You're mm-hmm. looking at it from a classical lens. You know, I wonder if that helps you as you move from actor to producer to writer, the idea that mm-hmm. you've got a larger sense of what the industry is all about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, I think moving, it helps being an actor understanding the other hats.
Yeah.
Because I there's the old adage, you know, time is money, and it can't be more true anywhere than in filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's literally just dollars out the window if you're not rolling the camera when you're on set. So as far as that goes from an acting standpoint, you know, okay, when they say roll, you know, you got to be on point.
Yep.
And then when you move to the other areas, you know, it's helpful to communicate to the actors that don't know how important those things are.
It's just hitting them in the head.
Yeah.
Go. Yeah. So how about cool people now? You've worked with Robert Redford, right?
I worked with Robert Redford, Emma Thompson,
yeah.
And Nick Nolte. They were in A Walk in the Woods.
Yeah.
One of my favorite stories, I worked with Burt Reynolds in a film called Elbow Grease. It has yet to be released. I'm really looking forward to that. But when I got out of undergrad, my acting professor in undergrad, a man named Stephen Ayers, he worked at Flat Rock Playhouse in Asheville. And Burt Reynolds was doing a one-man show there, kind of about his time in the biz and that kind of thing. And he got us into a tech rehearsal. And there was like 10 of us in there. And I remember I was watching him and there were several times I just almost asked him a question. It was that intimate, you know, I was like, hey, you know, and I didn't get a chance to meet him then, but it was really neat to kind of come full circle in a film like that and work across from him and be able to tell him that story.
Good guy to work with?
He was great.
Yeah.
He was great, and he's just a ladies' man. He brought roses to all the women on set. You know, he's a piece of work.
It must be nice. I mean, I'm sure probably it's happened to you where, you know, you've been warned about a particular actor or something, and it turns out, you know, not true.
That's right? True. I worked with David Carradine on a project, and it was shot in the Winston-Salem area. And everybody was saying, oh, steer clear of him. Oh, he's a jerk. Just, you know, steer clear of him. And we had to work. I hadn't met him yet. And we had to go over a scene. I had a scene with him and just walked on set and just kind of looked at him. And, hey, he nodded back and we started working. And I don't know, for whatever reason, maybe he respected that. I don't know. I didn't try to like, hey, I'm, you know, introduce myself, you know, any of that stuff. We just went up, went to work. And later on, you know, we were able to sit off set and in the makeup trailer and shoot the breeze. He was super nice, and he's actually a great musician.
You were saying he writes his own music.
He was playing. They were playing one of his CDs in the makeup trailer, and it was this kind of rockabilly. I described it as dusty rockabilly. It was this kind of southwestern vibe, but rock. It was really neat.
Some actors, on the other hand, really have earned their reputation. You worked with Mickey Rooney. I say that because I had him on. He was on the show once, and
right.
It was probably one of the only show that I remember, honestly, because
right.
he was the crankiest fellow, and it was great radio.
Yeah.
But wow,
when you're working on, you know, film since basically it was created.
right.
You know,
he was there before Los Angeles was there.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Geologically. He's a piece of work.
Is it true that there's actually a camera shot surreptitiously named for him?
Yes, it's when you hear "Give me a Rooney," it's a dolly shot for a camera. And what they mean by that is a short creep.
Just, serious.
Yeah, just a slow-moving short shot.
They call it a Rooney.
Yeah, they call it a Give me a Rooney.
This is great stuff.
Yeah.
Don't know if you can talk about this, but you've got a new project on Fox called The Resident?
Yep. I have a recurring role on that in the first season. I'm not sure if it'll be back in the second season. It's unclear yet, but as to that. But, yeah, that's out now.
And you're teaching.
And I'm teaching at Living Arts College here in Raleigh.
What's that like? Have you ever taught acting before? Is that any part of what you'd done before?
I taught acting at High Point University for a time. And I also have a private class. I have a Triad Actors Co-op in Greensboro that I teach acting classes. But actually, here at Living Arts College, I'm teaching independent producing.
That's the business part.
Yeah.
That's the business part. Very cool stuff. Actor R. Keith Harris, recurring role on the new Fox medical drama The Resident on Tonight at 9. You can also catch some old episodes of The Walking Dead as Dr. Harlan Carson and his new film, Shifting Gears, currently streaming on Amazon, iTunes, DirecTV, UVerse, and Spectrum. What a pleasure. Thanks so much for talking to this kid.
Thanks for having me.
You can find out all this stuff at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.